from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry and Wyatt Johnson Ford.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into another edition of Preds Insiders right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined in studio this evening by the color analyst on the radio network, the one and only Skillsy. Hal Gill joining us here on Preds Insiders this evening for the next hour. Hal, thank you so much for coming by the studio.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be back and talk about hockey starting 10 days away. We're getting there.
It really comes up on you. You know, when,
especially now.
Through the summer, once Labor Day hits, it's almost like you go from zero to 60.
Yeah. And it used to be like a long, drawn-out camp, and it was a lot more practicing. Now it's, you know, play your six games and let's go. Let's roll.
Well, the Preds played two of their six this weekend, Friday night in Tampa and Saturday night in Smashville, a 5-4 overtime win, which, you know, I was not there, but by all accounts, one of the best preseason atmospheres and games that you could ask for.
You'll never hear me say this again, but you really missed out on a preseason game. You really did. It was awesome. The crowd was into it. There was, you know, a lot of goals and excitement right to the end, an overtime game winner. Like it had everything.
Two power play goals.
Well, I call it a third because that was right when he jumped out of the box. So it really was an extension of the power play. But yeah, I mean, it was everything you're looking for as a Preds fan. You got to see, the young talent really stood out to me, and the older guys, the veterans who you're counting on, a lot of them had their first game and they look good. So it's a really good sign that they not only did they play well, but they got into a competitive spirit. You know, mm-hmm. Tampa's team, it wasn't anything to write home about. They brought some, they didn't have their higher end skill that we all know they have, but it was a competitive game and it was a lot of fun.
So let's start with the game tying goal. Matt Duchene ties the game with less than 4 seconds left. That was the first time he's suited up right there in Bridgestone Arena for the Nashville Predators. What was kind of your first impression of him in gold?
Well, there's so many different things to look at. We've been waiting so long for this to happen. Poile has been pulling for him. He's been trying to get here. It just hasn't. It was kind of a flirting period, and now they finally, it's here, and you're waiting to see, all right, now it's here. How's it going to work out? There's big expectations that he's going to be fantastic. I got a good look at him, and I a lot of people are talking, you can see it. You know, you don't have to look for it. You can see the speed. You can see the shiftiness, the stick work, the shot. He's a total package. He's got a lot of weapons to bring to the team, and he had some chemistry with Forsberg, and then it just makes it all that much better that the power play was really effective, and then he scores to tie it up with no time left. You know, I think it was a desperation play from Arvidsson, just turn and fire it from the corner, and it was right on Duchene's stick, and boom, mm-hmm. in the back of the net. And he's got a quick shot and a quick release, and it's going to be a fun year if he can play at that level and have some chemistry with the guys.
So that was the game tying goal, Matt Duchene, with less than 4 seconds left Saturday night against Tampa Bay. And then let's hear the game winner, your play-by-play partner, Pete Weber, on the call Saturday night in overtime.
Volkov comes over, puck slipped away from him. Here is Ekholm for Pitlick. Pitlick ran into Witkowski.
And now Pitlick.
Comes up with a loose puck after colliding with Witkowski, and the Predators win it at 1:39 of the overtime period.
So that was Rem Pitlick in overtime winning the game for the Nashville Predators, and I think a lot of people at the time thought, well, he may have just played his way onto the opening night roster right then and there, making that play in overtime to win the game, and everything that he's done in rookie camp and training camp leading up to that point. And then 24 hours later, we get the news that he's been sent down to Milwaukee to start the season. But whether or not he's on the opening night roster, Rem Pitlick, an impressive preseason, and he capped it off with that overtime goal.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. He was playing with Johansson and Arvidsson, and I thought he complimented them well. You know, it's so tough. You know, 15 one-way deals at forward, there's really no room. So what I think it does is his camp and how good he was, I think it opens their eyes. And now you have, you know, Poyle's got to like that because he's got an ability to move guys and know that in the pipeline there's some guys that can play. And it's not just Pitlick. There's five or six more that I was really impressed with that, you know, hopefully they'll get a shot at some point this year because I think they deserve it. You know, it's mm-hmm. tough. It's a game of numbers. There's only so many roster spots that you can fill up and contracts. You know, it's you don't want to lose guys, so you sign them and you keep them around. But there's always someone nipping at your heels, and you know we got a handful of guys that really deserve looks in the NHL. It's not going to happen now, but you know for Pitlick, I really think he did something special, and that was just a compete goal. And you know I think he's got the skill. But you combine that with a compete, and, you know, Laviolette loves that. He loves guys that are going to compete. And that goal was everything. You know, it's a skilled play to be able to spin and get that shot up over the shoulder of the goalie. You know, and that was just kind of his whole game and the way he played that night.
So there's been a lot of discussion this month about not only Rem Pitlick, but Eli Tolvanen as well. And Tolvanen scored another goal Saturday night against Tampa Bay, and whether or not they even had a shot at the opening night roster. And there were some people who thought Rem Pitlick had a greater than 50-50 shot at the opening night roster, despite what you had said, the 15 one-way contracts. Yeah. Are you surprised that they're not getting a shot in the last week of preseason to make the opening night roster, that already with two preseason games left, that they've made the decision that those two are going to start in Milwaukee?
Yeah. You know what the problem is you do have guys that have contracts and are going to be on the team. So you need to integrate them. You need to give them a shot. You know those guys are going to be around the program. They're not going to be traded anytime soon. Tolvanen, Pitlick, these guys can go down and you don't have to worry about them right now. You know they're going to get better. They have gotten better by spending their time and developing. So, you know, I think it is shocking when you see it because you're like, God, these guys are good. Give them a shot. Give them a chance and give them one more game, you know. But you also have to go through and look at the team, the makeup. You know, there's a lot of guys that are in the same, you know, that have contracts that are trying to find a way into the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as it is now, you're going to have three guys sitting out at forward. And, you know, it's not. It's not a non-easy decision. You got to find out where all these guys, all these chips are going to fall, and not just on your fourth line. Really, I don't think anything's settled on the first or second, third. You know, it's a whole lineup that needs to be formed. And so you need two games, I think, to look at your team and what you have. Deal with that first, and then you can re-entry, you know, get back into the talks about where you fit those guys in, where you fit Pitlick and Tolvanen in.
Mm-hmm. So the Preds did cut their roster down to 26 earlier today after six players passed through waivers. They had initially cut it down to 32 yesterday on Sunday. Of the notable names that were cut from the training camp roster, Colin Blackwell, Anthony Richard, Alexander Carrier, Rem Pitlick, Eli Tolvanen, and now it stands at 26, and obviously you can only keep 23 for your opening night roster. You don't have to keep 23. You can cut more than that, but with as many quality players as the Preds have on their roster, you would think they will stay at 23 for their opening night roster.
I can't imagine they'd cut anyone that or push down anyone that they don't have to. You know, you looked at Richard. You know, I know he's been developing. I thought he looked lightning fast, very similar to Duchesne's game. You know, he impressed me. So
Milwaukee's going to have a good team this year,
And that's exactly what I was just going to say. I talked to some of the coaches.
Sorry for stealing your thunder.
No, I talked to some of the coaches, And they're like smiling ear to ear. They got players. I mean, this is not going to be and it was for a while. It was so depleted. Poile made so many moves to get guys, and now somehow he's restructured and made deals that got him draft picks. That and the development is so important, and Milwaukee's been great. We all know what the report is on Milwaukee. They just churn out good players, and they're doing it again. I think those guys are getting better, but it takes time, and you know they're going to have more time with these guys. But you know, I can't imagine they'd send anyone down that they didn't have to.
Right. So with it at 26, I look at this as basically six players for three spots. If I'm looking at this roster, I think there's three forwards on the bubble that would be Daniel Carr, Mika Salamaki, and Freddie Gaudreau, and then three defensemen on the bubble, Steven Santini, Matt Irwin, and Jared Tenorti. I think three of those players will go, and then three of those players will be on the opening night roster.
And a lot of it is determining, you compare Jeremy Davies and Jared Tenorti, two defensemen, very different. I've been real impressed with Tenorti. Davies got an offensive upside that's awesome, but you're talking about a big, tough, solid D-man and an offensive defenseman. So which way do the Preds want to go? Those are the decisions that they have to make down the stretch. Santini, I know they want to give fair share, and they want to look at what he's all about. And then it comes down to, you know, where do you see guys? It's not always you're taking the best player. It's what's the best fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this guy, we need this, let's fit this guy into that situation. Killing penalties. Do we have enough penalty killers? Face-off guys are always important. We have a bunch of them, but do you want another one? There's a lot that goes into these decisions. So it'll be interesting. Last week will be fun to watch.
It's not only picking which defenseman, but how many. Because we've seen a lot over the last few years where Peter Laviolette likes to have eight defensemen on the active roster. But you've got three pretty good forwards there that I just rattled off. Daniel Carr, Mika Salamaki, and Freddie Gaudreau. And I can't really picture them cutting two of them or trying to subject them to waivers.
Right.
So if I'm Peter Laviolette and David Poile, I'm probably leaning towards 14 forwards, 7D, and not 13 and 8.
Yeah, you're right. And Daniel Carr was an offseason acquisition they needed to get. They went for him. And so they're going to give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
They signed him to a deal, and he's going to get his shot. So I don't know, man. This is why it's nice to sit back and talk about it on the radio. We can speculate all we want, but there's tough decisions that need to be made. I know Laviolette likes to have 8D. I've practiced with him in Philadelphia, and a lot of his drills are based on 8D. So, that makes it a little easier to do that. But who knows how this is all going to play out. I mean, there's a lot of decisions that aren't just the best player. It's the fit. It's the contract. It's a business. Some guys have contracts. Some guys don't. Do they think one guy is going to get picked up off waivers if they do send him down? Maybe they think one guy is going to slide down. And, I know they were upset about Boteto trying to slide him down into the minors, and they didn't think someone would pick him up. But we've seen that with Cody McLeod.
Yep.
You lose a lot of guys doing that. You hope that they sneak down and you can call them back up. But, it's a business, and you got to take those risks sometime.
Coming up next, the Preds have spent a lot of time experimenting with things in preseason. Will we see those things carry over into the regular season? We will get into that next. He's Hal Gill. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com, as well as Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Ryan Porth here with Hal Gill, color analyst for the Preds Radio Network, on this Monday evening after the Preds won 5-4 in overtime Saturday night in their preseason contest at home against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Hal, you mentioned last segment how in that game, Matt Duchene skated with Philip Forsberg, and you thought those two had some pretty good chemistry Saturday night.
Yeah, throw Tolvin in with that, but really it was about Forsberg and Duchene. Just the exchanges, I'm looking at that going, as a defenseman, trying to play against that. Where do you cover? You have a left shot, right shot, both crazy good shots with quick releases. You really have to close your gap. You have to be tight on those guys. Tolvanen, of course, with his release, we saw that a couple times, was the same way. But, you know, I really like the way they shifted coming up through the neutral zone. There's a lot of puck support, a lot of quick little plays. When they did get the entry, they're always a threat to score, I feel like. And that's as a defenseman, you know, if a guy's not a threat to score, you can back off and give him a little more room. If you got a shot the way Forsberg and Duchene do, you tighten it up, and then you're running the risk of getting smoked. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to be posterized by either one of those guys. I think it was chemistry. I think it was pretty obvious. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out, though. Do those guys have a legit chance to play together, not just on the power play? Because we saw on the power play, the low play is Duchene. The high one-timer is Forsberg. And I know as a right defenseman, you have to get down to take away that play to the net from Duchene. You have to. You're not going to give that to your goalie. You have to help him out when it's a player like Duchene. And then it goes up and around, and that's a long way to go out to get on a Forsberg one-timer. And I'm not necessarily blown away by Forsberg's one-timer. It's more his regular wrist shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can actually move and fire a shot that's just as deadly as a one-timer. So you have to get out there and be aware. You know, you can't just throw yourself out and try to block a shot. You have to be aware that you might get dangled as well. So there's that dynamic between Duchene and Forsberg is going to be fun to watch on the power play. And it'd be interesting to see if they make it a 5-on-5 thing as well.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at, because Peter Laviolette has been experimenting with different line combinations, as he always does in preseason. And we've seen it before where Jofa doesn't start the season together. He knows what he has.
It's always there.
It's always there.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Back pocket.
But we know Peter Laviolette also likes balance. And Kyle Turris is a part of this equation as well, where earlier today at practice at Centennial Sportsplex, Kyle Turris once again skated on the wing, this time with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson. And I do wonder if we're going to see a more balanced approach offensively in that top six with the top two lines, with Forsberg and Duchene together, Johansson and Arvidsson together, and then plugging in Turris and Granlund wherever they may fit best, and kind of attacking it with that approach and not just relying on Jofa like they had to do most of last season.
Yeah. Well, Turris is the whole issue of, you know, he had a down year. He had injuries. I think he's a great player. I think it's not like he's done. He just had a bad year with injuries. He played well in the World Championships. Can he build off that? Can he get confidence? And then where is his spot on this team? You know, you move him to the wing, and not to knock myself, but I'm not on this team. And if he was on my team, I wouldn't want him to battle my pucks out when I throw it up to him on the boards. You know, I'd go back, and my outlets were my D partner, my center, or my winger. And oftentimes I'm bumping it to my winger and I'm trusting that he's going to battle it out. If Turris was on my team, I wouldn't want him doing that. Now, that being said, he's not playing. He's playing with Josi Ekholm, guys that are going to lug the puck and they're going to carry it out. So the dependence on Turris battling out of the boards with a defenseman crashing down on him aren't that big a deal, in my opinion.
Okay.
So, that would be my biggest issue with him playing wing.
Is that the biggest adjustment? Just painting it with a broad brush,
yeah,
of moving from center to wing, is the battles, are the battles on the boards the biggest adjustment for someone who has never played wing?
Yeah.
In the NHL.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're a centerman, you're coming down, you're low support in the defensive zone. When you get the puck, you have options to move, little plays you can make. There's a lot of times where you don't have a play to make and you got to eat a hit and find a way to, if not get it out, then at least hold it on the boards and contain the play. So it's a difficult job to do. And, I'm sure, Kyle Turris is not looking at it at a stage in his career where he's dying to do that. I think he'll do whatever it takes to play, but I don't think that's his strength. His strength could be, if he's playing wing, is going down. He's really good on entries, and I hope they use him more entering the zone where he can make little exchanges. I think he had tons of success with Smith and Fiala last year, or whatever, when he got traded.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of exchanges and speed to the net and a cross and drop and then hitting the late guy. There was so much going on. You don't see Arvidsson and Johansson doing that all that often. It's usually a straightforward get it in, let's forecheck, let's make our low plays and score that way. So it's a different dynamic. And Duchesne brings more of that exchange with Forsberg we talked about on entries. So it'd be interesting if that can be more of Turris's game. I think he could play wing and be really effective that way. Because once you get in there's so many moving parts. I mean, Roman Josi could end up anywhere on the ice. And, that just means Turris is going to be anywhere as well. So mm-hmm. It's not too much positional in the offensive zone. I think he could be effective, obviously, there. I mean, he's a skilled player. And the little exchanges, if they can get those going, he can make those all over the ice.
So do you think, just looking at it in a vacuum, that Turris would be a better fit with Forsberg and Duchesne than Johansson and Arvidsson? Is that kind of what you were getting at? If you were to put Turris on the wing.
Yeah, but then you look at the low play, you don't have a bigger body. Joey takes a beating and is solid. And, mm-hmm. I really am impressed with his defensive zone. Arvidsson, he's always gets those breakaways. Why do you think he gets those breakaways? Because he's allowed to leave the zone early because he knows that Joey's down there. He's going to take care of business, and that can spring, the flip that Arvy, we've seen it a million times. Arvy yeah. just skates, blows the zone and gets
cherry pick a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. He's on the offensive side. And so, it comes down to matchups. If you're matching up against a big Blake Wheeler in Winnipeg, you're going to need some strength down low. I like Forsberg. I like Duchesne. I like Turris. But do you put them all on a line together? That's not a lot of beef down there. So that's another decision.
They just don't have a lot of beef, though, period.
Period.
Up front.
Yeah.
Which I think over the course of the regular season could become an issue at some point, especially in the playoffs, if they weren't to go out and get someone like, let's say, Brian Boyle and Wayne Simmonds like they did last regular season, where they're kind of in the same situation now going into the regular season without those net front presences.
You're missing a big point, though, that I think a lot of people overlook, is that you have Nick Bonino and Colton Sissons that are, I put them up against any of the beef, any of the speed. They can play against everyone. Defensively, I know that most of their faceoffs are in the defensive zone. You put Watson on that line, and that's as good a line as you'll see defensively. And they're responsible, and they can play those big minutes. So that allows you, really, if you want to have Joey playing big and you have that line, you can always match up against teams' big line. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a weapon that a lot of people overlook in what the Preds have. And maybe it allows you to have a smaller line like we talked about.
Coming up next, we take a closer look at the Preds' defense as the regular season looms. He's Hal Gill. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. Ryan Porth alongside Hal Gill on this Monday evening, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last segment, Hal, we looked at kind of the state of the forwards and whether or not there's going to be more balance in that top six to start the regular season. We haven't spent a whole lot of time this hour talking about your specialty, which is the defense. And Ryan Ellis, I know, is a pretty big question mark going into the season in terms of what are the Preds going to get out of him? Because last season, he did set a career high in points with 41, but the eye test would tell you he struggled at times, especially in the playoffs when he got shoved off the puck in Game 5 by Jamie Benn. Kind of this lasting image that we've had of Ryan Ellis all summer long. So what are kind of your expectations, Hal, for Ryan Ellis as he tries to bounce back from what wasn't a typical Ryan Ellis regular season and playoffs last year.
Yeah, the playoffs, I thought, you kind of summed up the whole team. I think they got pushed around by some bigger players that won battles. And, you know, you win battles, you win a series. But, you know, the last season, I thought Ryan Ellis is fantastic. I love his defensive game. And, you know, it's funny because I was watching him in Tampa in preseason, and he was up in the rush and buzzing around. And he wasn't babysitting Roman Josi. And, you know, it's exhibition. He'd just go out there and play. And he was all over the ice and on the forecheck, lugging the mail. You know, he's a guy that can do that. His role on this team is not to do that. He's got Roman Josi, who's probably the best roaming defenseman in the league. I think it is the case that he's the best. So he just stays back and lets him go. Does a great job covering for him. He's reliable defensively all over the ice. You know, he's a smaller guy, but I really think he protects the front of the net really well, and is timely with his stick and with his physicality. It's not a guy. He's not a guy that's going to go and wrestle someone away from the front of the net, but he can get a stick and he can jab a guy and move him out of the way just in time. You know, I really like his game, and I just think he complements Josi so well. And you notice Roman all over the place, but sometimes you forget how good Ellis is because he doesn't need to do all that stuff. The only thing I will say is I'd love to see him get his one-timer going and get that down, get some confidence in that, because his shot is really next level. He's got a bomb, and it's doesn't look like it's coming off all that hard, but his wrist shot, he gets it through, and his one-timer is a beast. So I'd like to see that more.
Well, to your point, last year only 7 goals for Ryan Ellis, where the season prior, in only 44 games, the injury-shortened season, where he missed the first half of the year, Ellis scored 9 in 44 games. And the year before that, scored 16. He had big goals in the playoffs. To your point, last year, and maybe this was part of the power play's struggles, is that you didn't have someone like a Ryan Ellis, you know, executing on that one-timer, that lethal shot from the point as consistent as he has been.
And the power play, in general, was just slow moving the puck around. And it was harder. It sounds kind of silly to say, but like a fraction of a second is all you need. That defense, that forechecker, that shot blockers, you know, he can get there. If you give him a half a second and you make that pass a little bit quicker, then that shot lane is open. And I think the Preds didn't really do that. They didn't do Ryan Ellis any favors by taking more time on their power play. That being said, when he did get shots when he came back in the half season, every shot was under the bar. And I think that comes with confidence, and I think that was the whole power play struggles, was just that confidence level wasn't there. Now, a new season, new excitement. We saw how good they can be. Maybe that confidence comes around, and maybe the one-timer with the points comes for Ryan Ellis.
Do you feel like the confidence, or maybe lack thereof, on the power play last season, and how it was just this elephant in the room, it seemed like, the entire season, once it started off so poorly, do you think that lack of confidence kind of seeped into some of the even strength play as well?
Yeah, well, for sure. You know, I've been on a bench. I didn't play power play as a pro.
I've always thought of you as a power play quarterback there.
Well,
now.
I should be, but they never tried me. How would they know?
Exactly.
You know? But, you know, you're sitting on the bench, and when it stinks, it's so deflating. It's demoralizing. Everyone just, all right, I got to go. I got the follow-up shift. It's always like, all right, let's get back on track. Instead of when you have a good power play, it's like, all right, we didn't score, but we got a buzz going. Let's follow it up. Let's keep it going. You know, that's the momentum that you're looking for from a power play. Even if you don't score, you get momentum. And it didn't have it last year. And, yeah, so that trickles. It's all connected. You know, it all goes through, and it's 5-on-5, power play, shorthanded. You know, whatever the case is, everything's connected.
Do you think the offseason was a reset button for the power play?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, you get Lambert, and you get coaches that are focused on it. And And now you come out with, and you know, you have a different look. You know, before
especially
you,
with Matt Duchene now too.
With Duchene, you know, I know Subban was a great power play guy, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it, to be honest. He gets shots through, and I know people are like, oh, he's got to take a big one-timer. You know, a lot of times he's really good at just getting a wrist shot through, and he did that a lot, and I like that about his game. But we have guys that can do that. You have Ryan Ellis. You have Roman Josi. You have Ekholm that can get shots through. The down-low play is going to be really important to get those plays going so that you can get the one-timer up top.
So kind of looking back at the defense as a whole with Dante Fabbro. Dante Fabbro seems like he's going to have a lot of weight on his shoulders to be in that top four, maybe not accumulate all of the minutes that P.K. Subban is leaving behind as he goes to New Jersey in the offseason. But Dante Fabbro, there's some pressure on him to play at a high level for someone who's only played in really 10 NHL games, including the playoffs dating back to last season.
Yeah, and he was good. And it's a small sample size. The biggest problem, and you know what, people don't understand it because they've never gone through it, but when it becomes your norm, it everything is different. You know, you get called up and you come from college. It's the most exciting. It's fully, it engulfs your life. It's everything that you've ever wanted is happening. And so you rise up to that. And you know, for 10 games, you've got laser focus and you're doing whatever it takes. Now you come into camp. Okay, this is your spot. You know, this is what we're going to work on. Okay, let's work on these things. And then, you know, 10 games in, you know, how's it going? You know, everything okay? You know, it's not that heightened level of focus that you need to have to be successful. So he's got to make that. And that's the challenge, you know, when I'm looking at him is, can he extend out? And I hear people all the time, you know, you go up to Canada and everyone goes, how could you not focus? You're playing in the best league in the world. You should be focused all the time. You should sell your family and get rid of your dog. No distractions, you know, because you're in the NHL. But it's real life. I mean, you're going to have real life problems. And for 10 games, he put it on hold. And now he's going into a season where he's going to be comfortable. He's going to have ups and downs. He's going to have to learn how to deal with those. And that's the biggest challenge, especially for a young defenseman, because when you have a down, usually it ends up in your net. You know, you don't have, you know, hey, Pex, can you help me out on this one? Juice, you got this one? You know, you need someone to bail you out. And he went through that. I don't know if you remember it, but one of his first games, he coughed up a puck in
Chicago.
And you know, they scored. And I loved his response. And everyone I talked to about it, he's even keel. He doesn't go too high or too low. That's going to be tested early on in the season. And especially in the, you know, once it comes to, you know, February and March, you know, everything kind of slows down. It's kind of a drag. You need to perform at those times as well.
The game you're talking about was the regular season finale in which they won the Central Division at home against Chicago. First period, early on, first 10 minutes, he, like you said, coughed up the puck, ends up in the back of the net, but he came back in the second period, to your point about the response. He scored the goal that kick-started that comeback on the Blackhawks.
That's right. And he had a, you know, I don't expect him to score goals after every time he makes a mistake, but that response is huge. And that's what you're looking for, because being a young defenseman, the players are so good. He's going to get beat. It's going to happen. It's going to happen a lot. And he's got to have to deal with it. Now, if you don't get better from it, then that becomes a problem. You have to be willing to learn, because he's really getting thrown to the wolves here. With Subban gone, he's jumping into a big spot. Now, I wouldn't put it past the Preds to have Hamhuis on hold to help him. You know, I thought Ekholm and Hamhuis played really well together for a stand where Subban was injured. And I thought that was something that they can always go back to. Hamhuis is just reliable. He's been around. He knows how to play against big lines. He knows what to do out there. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they give Fabbro a break, but I think it's his job to take if he wants.
Well, what you kind of described with Fabbro and him being called up right in the, and he's joining the team right as they're trying to win the Central Division and get into the playoffs and everything.
it kind of reminds me of what the Preds did with John Blum. John Blum, back in the 2010-11 season, I believe it was, called him up in March, and he exceeded all expectations as he was thrown into that fire.
Yeah.
And then he had an off season, and like what you described, enters the team on the NHL roster, and he was never the same player after that late season run and playoff run. Yeah. And
it's a very real thing. People don't realize that it's very real.
And I'm not saying Dante Fabro is going to turn out like John Blum, because John Blum, you know, within a couple of years was out of the league.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a different situation.
Absolutely. You know, you have to learn to deal with, you know, you have to be a pro on a night in, night out basis. It's not an easy thing to do. But, you know, I just think those are things that you can learn through, and why Nashville has always been so good at getting young defensemen is because you're going to make mistakes as a defenseman. It's going to cost your team. If you go up into Toronto and Montreal, you're going to watch those mistakes over and over, and your family's going to watch them over and over on every radio and TV show. It just gets thrown in your face, and it's devastating to young defensemen. That being said, if they make a good play, it's all over. You know, you're the best thing that ever happened. Nashville is very good at, you know, let these guys work through it. And you can look through the laundry list of defensemen that haven't gotten crucified for making mistakes. They make mistakes and they learn from it. So Fabro's going to go through that, and he's got to learn from each mistake, and he's going to make them again. It's going to happen. He's going to learn again. You know, it's a hard road for a young defenseman.
ESPN.com came out with their NHL future power rankings for the next 3 years. Where did the Preds fall in those rankings? We will tell you on the other side. This is Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth and Hal Gill, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Preds color analyst Hal Gill here on this Monday evening. Coming up Sunday from 2 to 6 p.m. outside Bridgestone Arena at Hilton Park, it is Preds Fest. Should be a whole lot of fun. I know I'll be there. You'll be there, Hal, right?
I'm going to be there. Moon Taxi's going to be there. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be there.
Should be a lot of fun this coming Sunday, 2 to 6 p.m., so get excited.
How much does that cost?
About that? I believe it is F-R-E-E.
It's free.
Yeah.
Wow.
Free is for me.
Free 99. That's the best price you'll ever pay. Yeah, that's a great event. We had a ton of fun last time. You know, I'm blown away by that the Preds do this. I think it's their way of giving back, and mm-hmm. But it really is an awesome event. It's everything for the families, for everyone.
It's a fun kickoff to the season. Although Sunday it's going to be 99 degrees and sunny. So get that sunscreen.
It's been like that. It's been like that for 5 weeks. It's been that way since spring.
Remember when we had like one day in August where it felt like it was 82 degrees? And it's like, damn, this is nice.
It's
and
cold.
Then went right back up to 99.
It's ridiculous.
I was just in Chicago this past weekend, and it was 70 degrees and windy. And I'm like,
well, it's Chicago, duh.
Windy, yeah. But at the same time, I was just praying for this weather to come to Nashville at some point. Instead of looking at the 10-day forecast.
We're going to skip 70. It'll go right to 60.
The 10-day forecast.
Be nice football weather.
Featuring a whole lot of Wayne Gretzky's on there. 99, 99, 99. Throwing a 98. Feels like a break.
Yeah.
But ESPN.com came out with their future power rankings for the NHL and looking at all 31 teams for the next 3 years. Number one on the list was the Colorado Avalanche. Number six, St. Louis Blues. And the Nashville Predators were at number seven in the entire NHL looking at the next 3 years. And their criteria for this is looking at the roster, looking at the prospect system, looking at your cap situation, and then the strength of your front office and coaching staff. Nashville coming in at number seven, and they basically say the roster and the front office are both borderline elite, and then the prospects and the cap situation are about average, and both could improve
yeah
over the next few years. So Nashville comes in at number seven looking at the rest of the Central Division, Winnipeg at 14, Dallas at 17. I was a little surprised by that. Chicago at 19, and then Minnesota bringing up the rear at 30.
Yeah, well, Minnesota with Bill Guerin jumping in, that's going to be – there's going to be a few changes there, I would guess.
Hopefully Colorado, a lot of changes for them.
Colorado is a beast. You look at young defensemen, Makar and Girard, just by saying those two, you're covered
yeah.
with young defensemen. And then, you know, you look at, you know, McKinnon is, you know, the contract he has, what is he making, $6 million? It's absurd.
It's a total steal.
The kid's nasty. Yeah, like every time I see him play, I'm like, how can someone go from 0 to 100 that fast? And his motor is always turning, and I think that team plays fast, and they're going to be tough.
Is McKinnon the second best skater in the league behind McDavid?
I think so. And even though McDavid is more like he's got a long stride and can open it up and then see you, McKinnon is just turn on a dime. It's so tough defensively to game plan against him, to try to cut him off from going anywhere he wants, because he is so shifty and so fast, and he's got a great shot to jump on it. So, but yeah, that I think Colorado, that's impressive that they're up that high, because, you know, they weren't there. They were one line for a while, and that changed around pretty quick.
Well, they were one line when the Preds faced them in the playoffs
yeah.
a couple years ago, but they've had like the same depth behind that one line for the yeah. last 3 years, and they just keep improving and developing all together. And
yeah.
that was something that the Preds really benefited from back in 2016 and 2017, when all these young guys that are mostly still together on this roster
yep.
that are not young guys anymore, they're becoming men. And the same thing's kind of happening in Colorado, and they just have so many just studs.
Yeah.
Rantanen, Landeskog, McKinnon,
yeah.
Girard, Makar, just embarrassment
yeah.
of riches.
Yeah. So I think they're just going to, you know, and I look at what Poile did is grew that group organically, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
He wasn't going out trying to sign the big guy. He got Duchene. You know, the trade for Weber and Subban was really an even swap. It just, you know, it happened. But, you know, they kind of got rid of a lot of draft picks and tried to make this team work. And work now. That's not easy to try to win now, you know. And they went for it, and I think they've done a good job of recouping all those draft pick losses and restocking the shelves. And now you look at these young guys coming in that are going to make splashes. You know, we talked about Pitlick and Tolvin, and these guys are going to make splashes at some point in the NHL. So whether it's, you know, this is a 3 year thing, I think those guys will be up, and you know. Poile's done a good job of locking in the guys that are part of this core group. So they'll be around.
And the early returns of their top two draft picks from this past summer, Philip Tomasino and Igor Afanasyev, have been pretty impressive this early on for kids that age.
Yeah. I you know, Tomasino, I like him. I think he's got a good, but that Afanasyev I thought was awesome. I just, if he can get stronger, develop his game, the way he skates is going to be, I think he's going to be scary good. So I'm excited about that as well. But it really comes down to the core group of guys that are here, and that Poile has, you know, Ellis taking less to stay here. You get Roman Josi signed, and, you know, hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Because I think he's going to blow up this year. I think he's going to have a great season.
Do you think there's another level of Roman Josi's game?
I think as far as scoring, I think there is. He creates point blank scoring chances that he hasn't quite finished on as many as he can. And I think that when that comes, he's just so hard to contain. He doesn't have the choppy skates that Subban likes to showcase in his Instagrams, but it's one stride and he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, that's so hard to defend against when a guy can separate like that, and he does it in the offensive zone and just really roves all over the ice. He's up in the rush constantly. I just don't think – I think he's the best defenseman in the game, and I think he's going to prove it this year. And, you know, he needs to get signed. I mean, that's a huge guy to have in your lineup, and you can't afford to lose a guy like that.
Hal Gill, Preds color analyst. You can hear him on the call with Pete Weber Wednesday night. The Preds back at home against Carolina. Two preseason games left, Hal, and the regular season is here.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, but there's a lot of work to be done, and I don't mind the last two games of the preseason because you have to find out what your team is all about. So the screws tighten a little bit, and there might be a little glitches here and spotting guy in here, but you're going to get to see the team, and that's what I get excited about. I want to see the team, and
absolutely,
we're going to get to see them, you know, if not the first game, then the second game.
Absolutely. Hal Gill, thank you so much, as always, for stopping by and joining me here on Preds Insiders.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
For Hal Gill, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks so much for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is the Rick Stockstill Show at 7 o'clock, plus Slapshot Radio making their season debut at 8 p.m. It's all right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.